This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County and Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, 89.1 DeKalb Sycamore, 89.3 in Morris Joliet, 88.9 in the Rockford area, Marengo, Harvard, and Beloit, covering much of central and also northern Illinois, and growing, thanks to you. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn. Remember always that we are brought to you by you, and any donations that you can make are always welcome, large or small, and we depend on you for our station to keep on operating, so it would be important to make a donation today. I'm going to talk a little bit more today about the book that I was talking about last week, that is True Confessions, Faith from a Life in the Church by Francis Mayer, and it's published by Ignatius, and if you would like to get the book, you can go to ignatius.com and get the book there. You can also call 1-800-651-1531. Again, that's 1-800-651-1531. And the price on that is $24.95. And also, I was mentioning the donations that people can make and that we always are welcome and glad to get. And I didn't mention our phone number. If you would like to call us, you can at 309-807-2427, or you can go to our website, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com, and it will tell you more about us, and it will also tell you how to make a donation. So please go there today and give whatever you can. It will be greatly appreciated. Before we start and talk about True Confessions, it's really an interesting book, and I would recommend that everybody get that. You'll learn so much about the inside workings of the Catholic Church and how our clergy in the Catholic Church think and what some of the lay people think. But before I start that, I'm going to read a little bit of a blurb from the Ignatius pamphlet that we get every month, and it tells all about all the books and so forth that they have, and it gives a rundown of those books. And so let me read from that, and it'll tell you a little bit more about True Confessions. And it's an introduction to the book by Archbishop Emeritus Charles J. Chaput. And the blurb itself says, "Over the past decade, Rome has been marked with sharp and often unwarranted criticism of the Church in the United States and American Catholic life. But very few of the critics have taken the time to talk systematically with a wide range of United States Catholics to understand their concerns. True Confessions is unique for its frank and in-depth interviews with 103 bishops, clergy, religious, and laymen and women from various backgrounds. The wide-ranging subject matter includes the unseen challenges of life as a bishop, the pressures and satisfactions of the priesthood, the diaconate and the consecrated life, the structural and leadership ingredients of diocesan success and failure, fallout from the church's sex abuse scandals, problems in Catholic universities, attitudes toward the Vatican, the role of Catholics in the academy and the secular culture, the witness of parents who have children with special needs, and the testimony of immigrant Americans as they assess their new homeland. Finally, the book presents the reasons why so many U.S. Catholics, despite today's challenges, continue to love the Church and cherish their faith with joy and energy." And so I think that covers a wide range of topics, and it's just something I think that every Catholic should read if possible, and get it if possible. You'll learn so much about the inside workings, but more the life and pulse of the Church and what our clerics are thinking, what their problems are, and some of the problems of the laity. It's just a wonderful book. And the last part there talks about the fact that Catholics still love their church in spite of a lot of the problems that are going on today. And I want to read from the book itself here, from one of the first chapters. And that chapter talks about love of the church as well. I'm going to read a paragraph that will introduce it, and then it will get to what Francis Mayer has to say about that love of himself and also the people for their Catholic religion. So we'll go ahead and do that. It says here in the introduction, "The sin of the modern era is pride, and pride makes the proud stupid. To borrow a thought attributed to George Orwell, himself no friend of the Catholic Church, but an honest voice nonetheless, some ideas are so stupid that only an intellectual can believe them."
I believe that.
The key word in that preceding sentence is believe. There are no unbelievers. All humans believe in something, including self-described atheists. They then construct their approach to the world grounded on that belief. "There is no God" is merely a different and defective statement of creed, because if God is really God, he can never be scientifically measured and disproven. Thus, as Lubach noted, modern atheism is not a negative, but a perverse positive, not an absence of belief, but a conscious anti-theism, built upon a resentment toward God and a choice to struggle against providence. In the process, anti-theism results not in the death of God, but the death of those things that make humans uniquely human. And I don't think anything could be better said. What do you think, Lynn?
Right. It's got it right. I like the way he writes, and I like what he says.
And then he goes on, and he talks about the love of the church and the love that he has and others. He says, "Loving God and loving the church are two different, if related, things. I love the church because she is my home, my extended family, the mother who takes us back, whatever our failures and mistakes. I love her for the grandeur of the art, music, law, architecture, and literature she has inspired. I love her for the brilliance of her intellectual legacy, which has no parallel in human experience. I love her for the good that remains in the civilization she shaped. I love her for her patience and mercy. I love her because she treasures and refuses to abandon the weak. I love her above all because what she teaches is salvific and true. There has never been a Christianity without the church. She's essential to the Christian life. The church preceded the Gospels, not the other way around. And the Christian faith has never been merely a personal relationship with God, as important as that is. It has always been, beginning in the upper room, an assembly of believing friends, an ecclesia, a church. I love the church despite the sins of her leaders and her people, including my own." And I certainly have to agree with that, Lynn. And when I'm reading this passage in the love of the church, one of the things that I like about the church and that just is sort of a symbol of the church for me are the great medieval cathedrals. And if you see the pictures of them, I've never seen one really, you know, in person, but the pictures and so forth, them, I just picture those cathedrals, especially in the early morning hours or in the late evening hours, as huge sailing ships sailing through time, sailing through the 2,000 years that she's been here. I know they were built in the medieval period, 1,000 years after the church was in existence. But to me, they represent the church itself sailing through time. You know, all the beatings she takes and the rain and the wind and the weather and so forth, and yet on she sails. What do you think?
Well, I think that's true, but I also think that they represent to me hope. Those people that build it were full of hope for the future, and hope is so important that we don't be given over to despair. There they stand. They've been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they're still there despite all the things that the church members have done to destroy her. She's there.
Boy, I certainly agree with that. In fact, actually, you really put your finger on it. I know you haven't read this yet.
We haven't. No, I haven't been able to get it out of your hands.
Yeah, we haven't had the book very long, and yet that's exactly what he puts his finger on, is hope. And he talks about that, and we'll get to that as I read on here a little bit more. And I didn't, you know, this is something that, I didn't read this to you, and you didn't know that it was in here.
No,
but,
I didn't.
But you certainly put your finger right on it. I couldn't have asked for anything better, because that's exactly the next point that is really being made. So let's go on. It says here, human beings are imperfect creatures. They inhabit and shepherd the church, and that has consequences. Not all of them welcome. Hierarchy and institutions are necessary to any long-term community. They help sustain and harmonize its life. They also too easily breed tumors, even in the life of faith. Thus, there's never really been a golden age in the life of the church. It's always been a patchwork of light and dark, saint and sinner. That's the nature of ordinary time. The epistles of Paul, John, and Jude, written with the death and resurrection of Jesus still fresh in the memory, make that vividly clear. Ordinary time in the liturgical calendar of the church brackets the great feasts of Christmas, Easter, and Pentecost, and the seasons of Advent and Lent. It's where we live the ordinary joys and sorrows, passions and apathies, achievements and car wrecks that constitute everyday life. And as with individuals, so also with the church. Having said that, though, I'll add this simple fact. I'm angry much of the time. Most of the people I know are angry about something most of the time. And if you multiply that by 50 or 90 or 200 million people, you get a sense of the real virus infecting so much of current American life. Anger is now the pervasive background radiation to our politics, our court battles, and our conflicts within the church. And it won't be going away anytime soon. The irony, of course, is that we live in the wealthiest, most successful democratic republic in history. Even many of our poor are rich by the standards of half the world's population. So, how do we account for the anger? We're living through a sea change in our politics, economy, culture, and self-understanding. And the church has survived such things before. But what's unique about our current moment is what the social researcher Hartmut Rosa calls acceleration and alienation. Science and technology are changing not just the way we think and act. They're also speeding up the rate of change. This disrupts organization and behaviors. It undermines traditional loyalties and social stability, and it renders individuals confused and frustrated. And that brings a point up that I want to make here, and we will talk about this sometime in another show. I've talked about it before, but probably it's been quite a while. And that is, the church has something. G.K. Chesterton, one time, was asked, you know, why he converted from Protestantism to Catholicism and why he joined the Catholic Church. And he said a couple of things. He said, one, he said, to get my sins forgiven. And he also said, because it has a democracy of the dead. And what he meant by that was that the church keeps and hangs on to its true traditions that it was given by Jesus Christ, and that it developed from Jesus Christ's teaching, the dogmas that it hands on and doesn't give up for thousands of years. And what Chesterton further meant by that it provides a stability. The democracy of the dead means that people who spoke about important things hundreds of years ago are still heard and considered by the church. All of the saints in the various ideas, dogmas, and the wisdom that they handed on down is kept by the church. In other words, The church doesn't jump from one stepping stone to another as if it was crossing a river, and it jumps from one stone to the next, leaving the other stones awash and behind, and going constantly like our modern society does, from one thing to the next thing, and then turning around and spitting at the old. It keeps the workable old and the wisdom of the old, and takes it with it. Those great monstrous cathedrals sailing through the night, they keep all of those old things and remind us of them, and they provide a stability in the world that the world desperately needs. And that's one of the reasons I think that Catholics should be Catholics, and that we should be evangelical and talk about that very thing, and show it to other people that without the church, the stability of the world is severely hurt. What do you think about that, Lynn?
Oh, I think so. If you think about the cathedrals and stuff that were built with human hands, and they represent the church going through an unstable periods of time like any ship, and they rock with the waves and the wind and everything, it kind of represents to me the attacks on the church and human frailty in the church and what it does to it. But yet it keeps going. It keeps going.
Exactly. And it goes on here and it continues. It says, then this constant modern acceleration by constantly leaving the past behind, but not only leaving behind, turning around and spitting at it, causes a lot of problems. It leads to a sense of powerlessness, and it leads to a sense of instability, which then triggers anger, which eventually burns out in exhaustion, which then easily leads to cynicism or acedia or despair or all three. And acedia is sort of a sense of just drifting, sort of a hopelessness, sort of a laziness and unwilling to do anything. At any rate, we're going to have to stop here and take a break. So stay with us. We'll come back and talk about true confessions a little bit more. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio.
We are the Easter people. That joyful quote from Pope St. John Paul II is truly beautiful. Catholic Spirit Radio has plans to broadcast more quotes, facts, and personal stories about this holy and beloved man. Hi, I'm Debbie Giorgiani from EWTN Radio, and I will again be the host of Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon from April 2nd through the 5th. Our focus this year is St. John Paul II, so you won't want to miss a single day of our special programming. We'll have plenty of other things to keep you entertained as well, including local and national guests, a gift for every donor, and daily drawings. Pope John Paul II reminds us that each of us are called to evangelize, and when you make a donation during the Carathon, you are helping to pay bills, update equipment, and create resources which share the good news of our faith. The Catholic Spirit Radio Network does good work for you. They are a nonprofit and definitely need your financial and prayerful help to continue broadcasting throughout central and northern Illinois. Spend time with us for Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon and show that you care on April 2nd through the 5th.
If you have some extra time, put those hours to use for the Lord. With Catholic Spirit Radio's growing radio network, we have three new behind-the-scenes volunteer positions. If you're interested, call the station, 309-807-2427.
Volunteers are specifically needed for each of these roles. First, an energetic and experienced event manager is needed to coordinate our spring and fall on-air fundraisers.
Give us a call if that's you.
Second, Catholic Spirit Radio needs 1 to 2 hours every 2 or 3 weeks from a volunteer or a team of two for lightweight general cleaning at our normal location.
Give us a call if you and a friend are interested.
And third, we are in need of 1 to 2 spirit liaisons from each of these areas: Rockford, Harvard, Morris, DeKalb, Sycamore, Lincoln, Pontiac, and Clinton. These individuals will assist with informational tables at your local events.
Give us a call if you can help out.
Become part of our radio mission in 2024.
Volunteer at Catholic Spirit Radio.
309-807-2427.
Hey, this is Father Mitch Pacwa, host of Open Line Wednesday. For me, Catholic Radio is a chance to speak and hear our Catholic doctrine, consider it, think about it, apply it to everyday life, and be blatantly in the public with it. And I am so thankful to you for being an important part of the Lord's plan. By participating and listening, invite others to listen and hear Open Line.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're talking about and reading from the book by Francis Mayer, True Confessions, Voices of Faith from a Life in the Church. And we're talking about the fact that there's a lot of anger today that sort of burns out into indifference or just exhaustion because of the constant changes in our society that people find a hard time coping with. And the author here, Francis Mayer, goes on and he says, if current trends continue, the attitudes of our culture toward Catholic belief are unlikely to improve. We can mitigate the pain, but we can't quick problems that we behaved ourselves into. We're suffering from outside factors we couldn't predict and can't control. But we're also harvesting the effects of a century of Catholic assimilation and naive optimism about the compatibility of Catholic teaching and American culture. And he really puts his finger on it here. The fact is that there is a difference between Americanism, at least modern Americanism, and the Catholic Church that are not compatible. And we as Catholics need to start recognizing these differences, reaffirming the fact that we are not completely incompatible with the country or the modes and so forth that we're living in modern times. We need to accept that, understand it, and be proud of the fact that we're not. We need to be Catholics again, is what he's getting at here. It says that we're being naive and we're being too optimistic about the compatibility of our Catholic Church with the American culture, because American culture, especially in modern times, has taken a turn for the worse. But we have to understand that there has always been a difference between us as Catholics and the culture of America, and that we are a leaven that America needs. And in order to provide that leaven, we can't completely assimilate into the culture. We have to provide a counterculture, a Catholic counterculture that will actually improve the culture that we're living in. And we need to go back to being Orthodox Catholics again and being proud of that fact. And even if it's contrary to what some of our compatriots around us might think or believe, we need to understand it and we need to live it. It says here, I've always believed in our potential as Catholic Christians to be a leaven in American life. It just hasn't worked out that way. Of course, that can change, but it requires leaders and their people who think in terms of the long haul and commit to missionary witness as their first priority in thought and deed. And I think a lot of the cultural change that we see going on now and the kind of society that we're living in now is a product of other people who have helped create this modern society that seems almost a form of insanity. And that has been going on for a long time. And the reason that it has happened is some of these people have simply persisted in pursuing this particular modernism. And they have been doing it for a long, long time. And they haven't given up. And little by little, they have taken over American institutions. And anyone who, among them, started making any kind of compromises were called reactionaries, and that's still going on, and they wouldn't let this happen. And we as Catholics who oppose this have to be the same way. It may take a long time, but we have to stick to our guns and little by little, hopefully, try and turn things in our culture around. It goes on, and Mayer says, Augustine, and this is an example maybe that we can follow. He says, Augustine of Hippo should be the patron saint of our age. Augustine was never an optimist, but always a man of hope. And there's the hope, Lynn, that you talked about, you put your finger on. And this is where, my reading is going to end on that note of hope. He lived at the end of a world, a Roman world unraveling into confusion, and not so different from our own. But in the face of all the fear and violence of his time, he wrote two books, his Confessions and The City of God, that still, after 1,600 years, rank among the greatest works of human genius. He could do that because he had hope. He had hope because he had faith. And he had faith because he pursued and encountered God as a vivid personal presence in his life, the source of his joy and confidence. And he never let the distractions and anxieties of his time dim that experience. And he lived in a time, believe me, I mean, the country he lived in, Hippo, or the city he lived in, was overrun by barbarians and vandals. Buildings and so forth were destroyed. Civilization was being torn apart. Wars were going on. Rome was falling. He lived in those times. And yet his books and his joy and his faith pursued through those times. Those times were as violent and up and down as our times. And so we can take a lesson from Augustine himself. He was not an optimist, but nevertheless, he didn't give up hope and he never ever gave in to despair. And neither did his mother. She constantly, didn't she, Lynn, prayed for him.
She prayed for 40 years.
Right.
So that he would mend his ways and come to the truth that she believed in God and in the Catholic Church. It was her that pulled him through. He lived a life prior to his conversion as many people today are living. I mean, it was no basis in any morals. The morals were falling apart, just like today. And that's how he lived.
Yeah,
he was a playboy, if you want to put it nicely.
Yes, he was. He lived a dissolute life. In other words, he was into the material things of the world and so forth. And he had no interest in being a Christian. And yet his mother kept praying for him. Monica, she kept on praying for him. And eventually he became a Christian. He converted and he became a priest and a bishop. And of course, one of the greatest figures of the church in history. And developed a joy and a hope that never gave in to the times. So it says here, we need to remember Augustine and his world, or Augustine. We need to remember Augustine and his world. We also need to learn from them. Augustine lived in an apocalyptic time. Today, so do we. But the word apocalypse, as Carl Truman suggests later in these pages, is easily misunderstood. It comes from the Greek words apocalypsis and apocalyptine, which means to uncover things concealed. An apocalypse may or may not involve suffering, but it always involves revealing certain truths about ourselves and our times. Many of us, maybe most American Catholics, still believe that we live in a familiar country with a familiar history, familiar rules, a familiar division of power, and a familiar personal role in governance through the ballot box. That country is draining away, and retrieving the best of the America we once lived in won't be achieved with the standard civic pieties, ecclesial attitudes, and framework of thought that so many of us grew up with. Some of what's now advanced as good for America is bad for the church and toxic for a life of faith. And we Catholic Christians need to understand this. And we really need to bear down and be Catholic again and be a difference in what's going on in our culture today. America has deep Christian roots in the early Puritan experience. I was raised, Mayer says, in a Catholic family with a strong love of church and a strong love of country in equal measure. Our eldest son attended West Point. It was a source of huge pride for my wife and me. The question that my wife and I, and many others like us, now face is simply this: what happened to the country we once knew? A country where civic duty and religious faith seem to coexist naturally and reinforce each other. Some of the shrewdest thinking about the Catholic role in the American experiment came from John Courtney Murray, the Jesuit priest and scholar. Murray was a key player in the 20th century development of positive Catholic attitudes toward religious freedom and American democracy. He saw clearly that the United States is a product of Protestant and Enlightenment thought. But he believed that Catholics could not only fit into American life, but also thrive here by contributing their faith to the moral health of the country. And that's been proven true, at least in part. We Catholics have done very well in America, arguably too well for our own good. Today, Murray is probably best remembered for his work on Vatican II's Declaration on Religious Liberty and for his book, We Hold These Truths, a book quite favorable toward America and its possibilities. But there's another side to Murray that's a useful footnote to his body of work. In 1940, he delivered a series of lectures that became an essay entitled The Construction of a Christian Culture. And in it, he said the following about the country that he loved. American culture, and this is Murray speaking here, John Courtney Murray, this is him speaking, I'm quoting him, and Mayer is quoting him here. And Murray says, American culture, as it exists, is actually the quintessence of all that is decadent in the culture of the Western Christian world. It would seem to be erected on the triple denial that has corrupted Christian culture at its roots. The denial of metaphysical reality, of the primacy of the spiritual over the material, of the social over the individual. Its most striking characteristic is its profound materialism. It has given citizens everything to live for and nothing to die for. And its achievement may be summed up thus. It has gained a continent, and it has lost its own soul. That's a pretty rough statement about America from a person who loved America and understood that it has to be turned around. Go ahead, Lynn.
This was in the 1940s?
Yes, it was.
Oh, brother. What would he think today?
Can you imagine if he came back today? You can imagine even if Augustine came back today and looked at our culture, he'd wonder.
I think it would be more familiar to Augustine than to Murray.
It probably would be, because Augustine lived in times that were actually being turned upside down.
Yeah,
pretty much similar
to
ours. Yes, he had lived through a horrible times. At any rate, it goes on. It says, elsewhere in the same text, he said, in view of the fact that American culture is built on the negation of all that Christianity stands for, it would seem that our first test step toward the construction of a Christian culture should be the destruction of the existing one. In the presence of a Frankenstein, one does not reach for baptismal water, but for a bludgeon. Pretty strong words,
yeah.
And I think we can probably take those words to heart today even more. Murray wrote those words more than 80 years ago. His sympathy for the American experiment was very real, but it hinged on our nation preserving its biblical leaven and Catholics staying faithful to their religious identity. Neither has happened. Just the opposite. The America of 2023 would be, and this is when Mayer is writing in 2023 here, America of 2023 and 2024, of course, would be unrecognizable to John Courtney Murray of 1940 or even of 1960. Since 1960, our world has turned upside down. The church is the soul of the world and the leaven of a just society. To live that mandate, she needs to recover her health and mission. But an illness can be addressed and healed only when it's named, which is the work of the voices that follow. And what Mayer means here is that he ends the introduction and he goes into all of the interviews and so forth with all of the people in the church, with 103 bishops and many, many priests and many deacons and many lay people and many parishes and so forth, putting his finger on the pulse of the Catholic Church.
Right. We have to keep in mind that the church was established, and Jesus said, upon this rock, I will build my church. that the church is the rock that we should cling to.
Exactly. And the next part that I want to get into here is often John Courtney Murray is used or quoted or as an example of the idea of the American idea that somehow is compatible with the Catholic Church, that there can be a separation of the church and state. That simply is not true. Murray, we'll get to it. But I am going to read the fact there are people today that even think that somehow or another the Catholic Church established the separation of church and state. It did not. And I'm going to read from another book here, Liberty, the God That Failed by Christopher Ferrara. And it puts his finger exactly on what the church has believed, and the church has believed for 2,000 years. And it certainly doesn't believe that there is a separation of church and state. It believes that there is a distinction, and also there is a misunderstanding of the of Christ when he said, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and unto God what is God." We need to reestablish what that exactly means, and it certainly does not mean that Caesar and God are somehow equal. That on the one hand we have Caesar, on the other hand we have God, and that we render under Caesar and we render unto God, and the two are separate. That simply is not true at all. Caesar renders unto God in Catholic thinking just as much as the church or the people render unto God. So there is no separation in that sense, and that's what we're going to get into here, because that is a huge mistake and has done a lot of damage. And we'll get to that in just a little bit. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio.
We are the Easter people. That joyful quote from Pope St. John Paul II is truly beautiful. Catholic Spirit Radio has plans to broadcast more quotes, facts, and personal stories about this holy and beloved man. Hi, I'm Debbie Giorgiani from EWTN Radio, and I will again be the host of Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon from April 2nd through the 5th. Our focus this year is St. John Paul II, so you won't want to miss a single day of our special programming. We'll have plenty of other things to keep you entertained as well, including local and national guests, a gift for every donor, and daily drawings. Pope John Paul II reminds us that each of us are called to evangelize, and when you make a donation during the Carathon, you are helping to pay bills, update equipment, and create resources which share the good news of our faith. The Catholic Spirit Radio Network does good work for you. They are a nonprofit and definitely need your financial and prayerful help to continue broadcasting throughout central and northern Illinois. Spend time with us for Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon and show that you care on April 2nd through the 5th.
If you have some extra time, put those hours to use for the Lord. With Catholic Spirit Radio's growing radio network, we have 3 new behind-the-scenes volunteer positions. If you're interested, call the station, 309-807-2427.
Volunteers are specifically needed for each of these roles. First, an energetic and experienced event manager is needed to coordinate our spring and fall on-air fundraisers.
Give us a call if that's you.
Second, Catholic Spirit Radio needs 1 to 2 hours every 2 or 3 weeks from a volunteer or a team of 2 for lightweight general cleaning at our normal location.
Give us a call if you and a friend are interested.
And third, we are in need of 1 to 2 spirit liaisons from each of these areas: Rockford, Harvard, Morris, DeKalb, Sycamore, Lincoln, Pontiac, and Clinton. These individuals will assist with informational tables at your local events.
Give us a call if you can help out.
Become part of our radio mission in 2024.
Volunteer at Catholic Spirit Radio.
309-807-2427.
Hey, this is Father Mitch Pacwa, host of Open Line Wednesday. For me, Catholic Radio is a chance to speak and hear our Catholic doctrine, consider it, think about it, apply it to everyday life, and be blatantly in the public with it. And I am so thankful to you for being an important part of the Lord's plan. By participating and listening, invite others to listen and hear Open Line.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. We've been talking a lot about True Confessions written by Francis Mayer, and it's an examination of what's going on in modern society. And what many people in the church are thinking, a wonderful book. And the book is talking about John Courtney Murray. And I'm getting to the idea that the fact is we as Catholics have to start being Catholics again. We have to understand that we are not totally compatible at all with American society, especially today, and never were really completely. And the idea that somehow or another we buy into this idea that there is a separation of church and state, that has never been the Catholic teaching. The Catholic teaching has been that there is a distinction between the church and state. The Catholic teaching has been that there is two there are. Pope Gelasius in the 5th century said that. Two there are. There is the state and there is the church. And but he even said himself, he said, when it comes between the two of them, the church itself is weightier than the state. I mean, the church is what gives direction to the state. The state does its thing, and the church should not get involved in the various tasks and duties that the state has. It should give the state the authority and power to go ahead and act on behalf of its own. Nevertheless, the church insists that that action should be in keeping with the general principles and dogmas of the church. Doesn't mean that everybody has to be Catholic and believe in all of the Catholic teachings and sacraments as far as the religious life goes, but it does mean that Catholic principles are to prevail, the general principles laid down for 1,500 years before the Protestant Reformation, which the Protestants themselves mostly have kept. And so that those things are compatible with our country, and those things are should prevail and should continue. And I'm going to read here from a book called The Liberty, the God That Failed, and it's by Christopher Ferrara, and it's talking about some of the ideas that have crept into the American idea of liberty, and the fact that those ideas are really divorced from God, and that we as Catholics should be opposed to some of them. And it talks about the so-called separation of church and state, which there is no such thing. And so I'll read from that. It goes on, it says, quote, "The disjunction between private and public morality that is a dogma of liberty, that is a dogma of a mistake, really, in what a lot of Americans think of as liberty. This dogma did not exist for Plato and Aristotle in Athens any more than it would for the Christians in Christendom." So he's asserting here that this is not a dogma of the church. "The same things are best for individuals and states, as Aristotle declares in the Politics." In other words, what's good for us as Catholics is also good for us as members of the state and all other members of the state. "The religion of the state, as a reflection of the religion of the people, was, of course, a fundament of political society throughout European history until well into the 19th century. For it is obviously nonsense to say that the individual, but not the collective of individuals making up the state, has duties to God." In other words, we can't somehow as an individual have duties to God and then leave those duties to God in the church when we step outside the church, and somehow or another now we're members of the state and we can leave God behind. The Catholic Church has never, ever taught that. And it's never, ever taught that the state doesn't have duties to God. It, too, has duties to God. "If there is a true religion and the great preponderance of people profess it, then the state will naturally and logically profess it as well. Catholic teaching was uncompromising in its defense of this perennial element of Western political organization." So that's why I'm being clear here. There is a distinction, as this article says, between the church and the state, but there is not a separation of the church and the state. And Catholics cannot fall into that error. Writing more than 2,200 years after Plato, Pope Leo XIII declared, "God it is who has made man for society and has placed him in the company of others like himself, so that what was wanting to his nature and beyond his attainment, if left to his own, he might obtain by association with others. Wherefore, civil society must acknowledge God as its founder and parent and must obey and reverence his power and authority." In other words, civil society also needs to understand that all of its power and all of its principles come from God. In other words, our rights come from God. Justice, therefore, forbids, and reason itself forbids, let me find my place here, and reason itself forbids the state to be godless. Since then, the profession of one religion is necessary in the state. That religion must be professed, which alone is true. And this idea that religion is merely an opinion. Now, this was an idea of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, that religion was a matter of opinion. Actually, it was John Locke that set down that principle in the first place. But Catholics do not hold that religion is simply an opinion. We hold that the Catholic religion is factually true. And in fact, more than factually true, it is more than materially true. It is universally true. And that's how we as Catholics have to act if we are going to be a leaven for this society and bring the society back to its senses. Leo's successor, Pius X, insisted as recently as 1906 that the members of the state owe God not only a private cult, but a public and social worship to honor him. This dictate of practical reason, proceeding from the premise of Christ's divinity and his foundation of a teaching church, was recognized even by Jacques Maritain, the renowned but inconsistently progressivist and proponent of integral humanism, when writing in his traditionalist mode. In other words, he's saying here, Jacques Maritain was a strong progressive. And of course, progressivism has morphed into something that's toxic to America. But even when he was, back at that time, a strong progressive, he still understood that he was writing within the traditional mode of the church and understood that the state itself owes a duty to God's dictate and God's laws. We must affirm as truth above all the vicissitudes of time, the supremacy of the church over the world, and over all territorial powers. And we as Catholics have to understand that. The church is not to be somehow subordinate to modern society or subordinate to the state. There is the church and there is the state, and both are under God. Picture a person with a head and two hands, one on the left and one on the right. The head is above and on top, and that head is Jesus Christ, you know, who is also the head of our church. And on the left side, we can say, is the state, and on the right side is the church. And the state and the church are equal in this respect. One does one thing and one does the other. And both are under God, and all of our laws and all of our state principles come from God. Our rights come from God. They are not given to us by the state. Even our Protestant founders recognized that our rights came from God and not from the king. And it goes on. We must affirm as a truth of all the vicissitudes of time, the supremacy of the church over the world and over all the terrestrial powers. On pain of radical disorder, she must guide the people toward the last end of human life, which is also that of states. And to do that, she must direct in terms of the spiritual riches entrusted to her, both rulers and nations. In other words, she has to set the direction for both rulers of any particular nation and for the nations themselves. And we have to understand that. And he goes on here, he says, for the radical disorder of which Maritain wrote is the core of the crisis of Western civilization. In other words, the reason we're having so much trouble in our civilization, the fact of that matter is because we are not following the church and the church's teaching and understanding that there are two, there are, as Pope Iglesias said, the church on the one hand and the state on the other, certainly a distinction between the two, but not a separation. We can't walk out of our churches and somehow or another think that all of our duties to God fall away, that somehow or another we can suspend what we believe as Catholics when we act as members of the state. And our politicians have to quit doing that as well. your constituents simply don't give you the right to act in contrary to the duties and teachings and principles of the Catholic Church. And if that's hard, then it's hard. But you can see what is happening to our society when those principles are abandoned and our society is becoming almost a form of insanity. So, any comments you want to make on that?
That is really reflected in what's going on today in society. You can see it. We have lived through a great part of this change, you and I, Bob. And for younger people, things have accelerated at quite a pace. It's amazing how fast things can change and affect your society and culture so much. We have to have that mainstay to cling to. And the mainstay has got to be the church and the morals.
Yes, they seem to change in a hurry, but I think it's this. Things accumulate little by little over a long period of time. Actually, if you look at history and study it, we have been moving in the direction that we're moving for a long time, probably from 1860 till about 1960 is when the bulk of these changes were made. A little at a time, Catholics assimilated, and a little at a time, Protestants assimilated to the modern, secular, materialistic culture, a little here and a little there and a little here. Nothing actually appears to change, though. The structure seems to stay the same. Everything seems to stay the same, but it's been riddled and weakened by all of these various ideas, that's my opinion anyway, accumulating over a long period of time. And then when the collapse comes, it seems suddenly rapid. I mean, one day we have a wonderful church, lots of priests, lots of clergy, everything seems to be going fine, and then all of a sudden, in a rush, the whole thing collapses. And it's been coming a lot longer, I think, than people realize. It's sort of like a frog being, or a lobster being boiled, in a pot. If you put it into the water and the water is cold, and then you turn on the heat and don't turn it up too rapidly, put it on at a small time, little by little, the lobster is cooked or the frog is cooked, and the lobster doesn't try to get out, and the frog doesn't jump out. If you dropped it in hot water, it would jump right out. But it doesn't do that, and it's the same thing. And the people today, the young people today, they have no way of looking back at the past. They're not getting a good history. It's being distorted, and the past is being judged by present standards, which is totally wrong ever to do. And so the important thing that they need for stability, and I think this is why there is so much mental illness and so much disorder in our country and so much problems among young people, is because they don't have the history and the culture and the formal structure being handed on to them from the past, and they have no way of understanding what the past behavior was and why it was or how it existed. And so they are in a lot more like the frog or the lobster being in the pot and not understanding what is happening to them at all, because they have no way to judge. They have no standards by which
to judge it,
to understand it. It's just to accept that what's going on in society is being the norm. It's sort of like I remember reading about the Holocaust and this Jewish scholar was saying that when he was a little boy, he walked along the street, I think it was in the Warsaw ghetto, and it seemed normal to him that people were falling over and dying from starvation and disease, and that there were, constant sirens and whistles and people being herded and so forth. I mean, there was no way for him, his past and his culture was not being transmitted to him, and he didn't know, and he just took all of these things for granted that this is the way the world was. And it suddenly hits you that, how it would be. And so I think a lot of this is playing out today.
Probably so. It's hard to tell with time, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Sometimes it seems very rapid to go by very rapidly. Other times it does not seem that way.
It doesn't.
It drags. it seemingly drags.
And I'm going to ask John here. I've been so busy going from one thing to another and reading this and paying attention. Are we in our third segment or are we in the first segment?
The third.
We're in the third segment already. Boy, the time just went by so fast because to me, just reading this, this book itself is just to be fascinating and reading some of the things. And it seems that this Francis Mayer is such a good writer. And he writes so many things about the church. I can't emphasize enough that people should get this book if you want to put your finger on the pulse of the Catholic Church.
Yes, this book just came on Wednesday, and he has not had it out of his hands since.
And,
it's not a real thick book, but
no, it's not.
It's so packed with information that every paragraph has a real point.
And I promise I'm going to talk more. I was going to try to get into the idea of forming a Catholic resistance movement to resist the direction that our culture is going and provide support and friendship for people who are being ostracized and being attacked by the woke culture. Sometimes people who are in positions losing their job or they're in a job where everybody hatefully attacks them, especially in the universities and so forth. And I was going to read some articles about some of these people, some of the things they have to say about what has happened to them in our universities. But I'm not going to have time to do it here. So, again, keep in mind that if you're able, start thinking about starting a Catholic resistance movement to provide support for people like this. And next week, I promise I'll get to that, and we'll talk about some of the things that are happening to people who resist our modern progressive culture. So at any rate, St. Michael the Archangel,
defend us in battle.
Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil.
May God rebuke him, we humbly pray.
And do thou, Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio